You see, Garrett didn't even bother printing liners because there's nothing there. But I do know that our slow pitch tournament sold out.
Yes, sir. I heard that yesterday. They were like, you're going to be there, right? You're going to come hit dingers, right? And I was like, probably not, but I guess I'll show up.
You going to be there?
Yeah, sure. I'll be there for a while.
Well, you got something to do later?
Yeah, the Stampeders play at 5 o'clock, so I'll be going to that. You know, working.
So you can't even get sauced?
Yeah, we'll see.
Garrett, you coming?
I can't make it that day. Got an appointment, but I might try to make it out after.
One appointment puts you out for a 12-hour day?
Well, it's like scheduled right in the middle of the time for
Come before, come after.
Try to make an appearance, but we'll see how it goes.
I want to see this guy in the home run.
Yeah, let's see the text line. Who wants to see GVP come out and rip dingers?
Absolutely cranking him over the fence.
Oh, my goodness. See you later. What'd that ball do to you?
He's like, oh, I don't need two hands for this. I'll just use one hand.
One hand. See you later.
Athlete.
I would say, yeah. Broad shoulders.
Used to be a pitcher, he said.
Yeah.
The shoulders don't really work anymore.
What'd you cap out at?
I haven't really been gunned. Like too much, but somewhere like mid 80-ish.
That's pretty good. It's probably harder than I could throw. In my prime, of course.
Yeah, it's funny, man. When you think you can throw decently hard, someone puts a radar gun up and you get humbled real fast.
Ooh, 22. Whoa, what is it? That's like
47.
That's an Ephus pitch. My goodness.
Text line, GVP is a beast in the box. Confirm or deny?
Probably a teammate.
Is that a buddy? That must be a buddy.
Careful.
Well, I was like an okay hitter. At times I'd get on a hot streak, but I don't know. Usually just stick to the bump, pound the zone. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Sure do. I'm not very good at the sport, so I'm not gonna. I can't really comment. But
you'll be happy if you hit one.
Oh yeah. Just put it in play. Just put it in play.
Let's find some green.
Oh yeah. I had one of those last time I was playing where it goes off the bat and drops down like 2 feet in front of you. And then you got to race against the pitcher to get to first base. And did the run, and my quads were just burning. I'm like, I'm not meant for this. What am I doing out here?
Yeah. This is not the right sport for my athletic body.
No. Skating. Stay skating. It's half the work. Half the work. One push will get you twice as far. Play defense. We don't have to go up and down the ice all the time.
G has a little Dion Phaneuf in him, hey? Until it's canceled. It's not canceled.
Keep the hope alive, baby.
Yeah.
I'm optimistic because until it's canceled, it's not canceled.
Yeah.
Nice job.
Kind of sounds a little bit like Dion.
Yeah, he kind of does.
A little bit.
Can you repeat the quote back to us, GVP?
You play it again.
I'm optimistic because until it's canceled, it's not canceled.
I'm optimistic, but it's not canceled until it's canceled.
That's pretty close. Soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, close. Nailed it.
Close enough.
Where is Stephen Brunt? I believe he's taking the summer off. Should be back in September? October?
Question mark?
November?
DBD?
December? January?
Hopefully back after the summer.
Yeah, he's out of...
But this is the time of the year when it's kind of hard to get guests on, and he used to always join the boys like from his vacation, and it was a little bit different, so we're not going to bother him
while
he's
like
on vacation.
Not really in civilization right now. He's remote.
It's a bit of a chore.
He's remote.
Yeah. So we're going to let the guy be.
Believe in Newfoundland.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. Great.
Yeah. I love that text.
A little ocean spray. Mm-hmm.
Gee, has a little Dion in him. Earlier on, we were talking about Daryl Sutter and the farm team.
Yeah.
Same texter said, what if the fax machine runs out of ink? How is Daryl going to get player updates? Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully he'll find a way.
I think he's watching games. I really do think he's watching games. I really do.
I don't think he's watching full games. He's a little busy.
Yeah, he's very busy, but
he's probably, a very busy guy.
Probably get some film to look at on some of these guys every once in a while.
Probably. I would suggest. Keep your text coming. 960-960. Text line is always open to you at 960-960. Just after 720, got a guest announcement for you. Coming up in hour number three, going to be joined by Flames defenseman Oliver Shillington. Going to join the show. 8:10 this morning. Talk to him about his new contract. 2-year deal for Shillington. Of course, a career best season across the board last year. Games played, goals, assists, points, plus minus. Not a career high because he was plus 16 in 19-20. But 34 penalty minutes, of course, the 12 playoff games. So looking forward to that conversation. 2-year deal for Oliver at $2.5
million. Yeah, very much looking forward to it, seeing how the offseason's been going for Oliver. I'm very interested to see how this blue line ends up rolling out when we get a little bit closer to camp. Like, that's probably one of my biggest questions right now. You look at it and you say, yeah, there's six NHL defensemen here. How does it line up? How do they distribute the ice time? Who's going to end up getting some power play time? That type of thing. So I'm looking forward to this chat with Oliver. A little bit of certainty, obviously financially getting some certainty there with a couple years on that contract, totaling $5 million, $2.5 annually. So I like the deal. I think it's a good one for a player who had an outstanding season. But there's obviously things to build on. He had 21 points in the first, you know, kind of half of the season, and get 10 points in the last, you know, 30-ish games of the season. You know, there was a bit of a drop-off there. So it's about getting to that consistent point, because if you can get, you know, that guy up to 45 points and you're getting that off your blue line, you're pretty happy. Especially if he can continue to battle and grow his defensive game as well. He's going to be a pretty good player. And, you know, I do wonder if there's going to be opportunity for him on, you know, a power play two this year as well. There's a bit of a logjam. You got Anderson, you got Hanifin, Uyghur, someone who's played on the power play before. But is Shillington a guy who can kind of start to get a little bit of traction there as well? He's got the offensive tools, right? He can walk the line. He's got good vision, shoots it pretty well. I could see a situation where maybe on the second power play, he's one of the two defenders.
So Oliver Shillington will join the show in just under an hour's time, 8:10. Oliver will call us, and looking forward to that conversation with the Flames defenseman, who, as Matt mentioned, signed a 2-year deal earlier this week with an annual average value of $2.5 million. Do we expect much? We mentioned Adam Rozicka, but like, are you expecting much news from the Flames from now to the start of training camp? I know there was a portion of the fan base who was very hot and heavy about Nazem Kadri. Mm-hmm. I don't think that works financially unless you're making a big move with a Milan Lucic or a Sean Monahan, which at this point, because it's been so quiet, maybe that's where they come out of it is, you know, it's quiet and then boom, and it all of a sudden happens. But just don't think that that is ultimately what ends up happening here. What are you expecting anything, or is this kind of what you see, what you get come training camp here?
I don't know. I could see a situation where what you see is what you get come training camp, plus maybe like a Michael Stone or something like that, like a veteran, a league min to, you know, create a little competition in camp, as we always say. I could see something of that kind of line, but I don't know if I'm going to commit to this being a big trade or signing of a Kadri or even a guy like Evan Rodriguez. I could see a place on the roster where, yes, it would fit. But the thing is, for the Flames to do anything, and this is what you and I have discussed going back before the Mangiapane signing, before the Shillington signing, is that if you want to do anything of that, you probably have to make a corresponding move to get some salary out of here. And what are you going to pay to get some salary off of your roster, that being a Sean Monahan or a Milan Lucic? Whichever way you want to go, those would probably be the two that you look at and say, if we move this player, we would have a lot more flexibility to go out and add something else via free agency, because there's still some good players out there. Don't get me wrong, but the Flames don't have enough space. And if they feel like the price is too high to move out some big money and it's just the final year of both these contracts, I could see them sitting pat at least to start the year. And, you know, those are always moves that you can try and facilitate once you get in season as well, once you kind of have a better idea of what you're working with here. you know, this is a team that's gone through massive change in the offseason, losing Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk and bringing in two very good players in Mackenzie Weegar and Jonathan Huberdeau, but you never know how that's going to work. So I would caution to going out and doing something big and long-term and big money until you have a little bit idea of what you're kind of working with here once the season rolls around and gets a little bit closer and you get, you know, a 10 dozen, you know, 10 to 12 games under your belt with this group. Hopefully they can come out of training camp healthy and you can have a better idea of what it is that your team lacks, what it is that your team has a surplus of, and you can try and adapt and change. And by that time, maybe you have a better idea of what the teams in the Pacific Division actually are, and you know slightly more so than you would do in the offseason what the Pacific is going to be and how things are going to shake out for your team.
Of course, sitting right now with just over $1 million in cap space, so by all intents and purposes, they are a cap team. But it would also, I would suggest, be kind of nice to go in with a bit of wiggle room with that salary cap, and whether that is a trade in season or, you know, moving guys up and down from the American Hockey League. Sure. I just think if you've got that wiggle room, it makes things a lot easier. And I don't think that Brad Treliving and company are opposed to having said wiggle room to open the season.
No, always good. And this is a team that, you know, the last trade deadline did not decide to move their 2023 or 2024 first-round picks. They actually acquired another one in 2025. So with four first-round picks over the next 3 years and perhaps a situation where you want to remain competitive in this next year or two window when you kind of look at the way that a lot of the contracts for the Flames are kind of structured term-wise, as far as propping the window open with this core sans Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk, I think it makes sense to maybe look at a situation where you can accrue some cap space over the course of the season by keeping Sean Monahan on injured reserve rather than the long-term injured reserve. Get to a situation perhaps like the New York Rangers last year where, yes, they had some guys that were injured, but they were on IR instead of LTIR, and by the time the trade deadline arrived, the Rangers had accrued like $30 million in cap space, and they could basically go out and do whatever they want. And they didn't get a big piece. They ended up using it on a handful of kind of secondary, tertiary pieces, and it worked out pretty well for them. But this is a team that's going to have a little bit of flexibility as far as what they have for assets. You want to keep that cap flexibility open. I think they're in a pretty good spot right now if you go into the season with this team. Now, I think that last offseason, the question was being asked, where are all the goals going to come from? And the answer was mostly the top line with a little bit of depth. And I think that's going to be the biggest question for this team going into this year as well. When you subtract two big players like that, you kind of got to look at it and say, okay, who's going to be the offensive guys now? Because there's some different faces that are on the forward group. Kevin Rooney's a new face. Perhaps Jacob Peltier's a new face. Obviously, Jonathan Huberdeau is a new face. What is their production going to be at the NHL level with this particular group in this system?
Of course, the other big signing this week was Andrew Mangiapane. He avoided arbitration with the Flames, agreeing on a 3-year deal at $5.8 million. And we were very curious on the term for Mangiapane, as I think many expected long-term, but ends up being 3 years, and he told Sportsnet today yesterday that 3 years made the most sense for him.
Yeah, it was kind of up for discussion, right? I think they were kind of open to doing, and so was I, kind of open to doing kind of anything. And I think just the three-year deal just kind of felt right for both parties. And I'm happy about it. And don't have to worry about this for another 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
3 years.
Yeah.
Classic. So 3-year deal for him, $5.8 million. He'll be a UFA at the end of it. This buys 2 years of UFA status. So you just heard there from Mangiapane. Long-term was discussed, but 3 years made the most sense for him and his camp. And we'll wait and see what happens after the 3 years. But we talked a lot about that yesterday in terms of maybe how that ended up at three years. And then, of course, want to see what his reaction is. You mentioned Daryl Sutter's first press conference. What about Andrew Mangiapane, his reaction to two of his teammates leaving in the offseason.
Yeah, it was interesting for both of them, right? Obviously, John, you know, he had that option if he wanted to go to re-sign or to go to the UFA and to be a UFA and to go wherever he chooses, right? So you kind of saw that coming throughout the whole season. I think the Chucky one kind of maybe took me for a surprise. Obviously, I knew he was up and everything like that, but it was a big trade and big move, but you know, I'm happy for him if this is kind of what I guess he wanted and everything like that. And or I'm happy for both of them, really, and they're both two great people on and off the ice. So I wish nothing but the best for them, but it's almost time to move on and to build and to grow what we did last year, this year coming up.
It's kind of an answer, non-answer there from...
Well, the most interesting part there for sure is the thing that he says about Johnny Gaudreau and saying, you know, he was a UFA and we kind of had an idea that this was going to happen over the course of the year, right? And you're like, well, the whole year? You kind of had an idea that this was going to happen?
Had some conversations.
Yeah. And then...
Again,
but the 11th hour, hey?
Trust me, everything that happened with Gaudreau in free agency, none of it for me passed the smell test.
Yeah.
And I know that if you're Brad Treliving, you want to remain optimistic and confident you can sign your player. Because,
and you have to.
Right.
Because he's not some scrub piece.
No, he was your best player. But yeah, for me, none of it passed the smell test. It felt like he wanted to go from day one. But. Yeah.
Not great. Really not great. But hey, do we have now you just look towards the future and continue to build.
Speaking of the future, here's his thoughts on his new teammates from Florida.
Definitely very exciting, right? Obviously those are, you know, some two top players in this league. So you know, I'm definitely excited to get to camp and introduce myself and you know, see what type of player they are, and should be exciting, right? Obviously we're going to have a different team, but I think the majority of guys are still here. And, you know, I think we still believe that we can grow on what we did last year.
Speaking of last year, he gave some thoughts on Daryl Sutter.
You know, a lot of guys had career years individually, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as a team, we took a lot of steps. And, yeah, this year two is I'm excited for it, right? Obviously, Daryl's a great coach, right? And he pushes you to be the best player that you can be, right? So, and then that's always important, right? For yourself and for the team, right? He's always there to push you so that the team at the end of the day is winning, right? And that's what we want to do at the end of the day is win hockey games.
So there's some thoughts from Mangiapane. The entire interview is available for you on our website and wherever you get your podcasts as he joined Sportsnet today on Wednesday.
Yeah, and it's a good chat. I think it was pretty standard for the most part, but I'm excited to see what Mangiapane can do moving forward. Like we've talked about, there's going to be some increased opportunities, some increased roles for a player like him within the Flames organization. With some of the moves out, you know, top line, you got to imagine that he gets at least a little bit of time with the top group at some point this year, because it's so rare that really you do see a line stick together the way that the top line for the Flames did last year. For sure, he'll be in the top six, you know, and he talks about one thing that he wanted to improve on in the offseason, and it's consistency. And it's the one thing that, like, when talking to some people around town about this contract, you know, some felt like maybe the money was a little bit high at a short term, like 3 years. But to hear the one thing that he's thinking about is consistency is a good thing. And the one thing I would argue that even if a player is inconsistent, 35 goals out of 82 games, I think it's something that you're willing to pay for. Whether it comes in bunches or it comes in, you know, every other game consistently, I think, if you got a guy who can put up 35 goals and wants to stick around, you sign him. I don't think you need to overcomplicate it too much.
Well, the chat with Oliver Shillington at 8:10. Looking forward to that conversation. But when we come back, he's Matt. I'm Will. Garrett's here as our producer every single day in the other room. We're live in the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio. Take a break. Come back. Continue on hour number two. Big Show in the Morning rolls on your Thursday. Good morning, 7:34, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Good morning, and welcome back to the show. Big Show in the Morning. We're into hour two on the podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google, or Amazon. Throw the episodes up like just a few minutes after the hour is done. So if you catch the back half of a segment, you're like, "What? What are these lunatics talking about? I should hear the start of this." Boom. You usually have to wait no more than an hour to be able to have that at your fingertips on these little supercomputers that we carry around in our pockets. Very excited to dive into a little bit of a Stampeders conversation here before we get to Oliver Shillington just after the top of the hour. As today, the CFL week does get going. The Stampeders are doing a little road trip out to Ottawa to play the Red Blacks at 5:30 Friday night. Action starts this evening, 5:30 for Montreal as the Blue Bombers take on the Alouettes. But the Stampeders, it's interesting. We're going to get the depth charts a little bit later on today. Did get some-ish, I'm not going to say good news, but we got news, I guess, coming out of the last practice in Calgary on Wednesday. Several players are going to miss this game. To no surprise, Sean McEwen and Trey Roberson are both going to miss the game. McEwen's dealing with an ankle injury. Saw him around practice in a walking boot and on crutches, but didn't really get much of a timeline with the long weekend. There was a little bit of delay in getting some testing and getting the results back from some testing. So still waiting on kind of a timeline and diagnosis for Sean McEwen, who is the center for the Calgary Stampeders. Bryce Bell, in his second year at the club, is going to slide right into the center position, we would assume. Depth chart's probably going to get released in about an hour's time for both the Stampeders and the Blue Bombers, an hour, hour and a half type thing. So that's one loss. The other would be Trey Roberson, the boundary cornerback, went down with a knee injury. Very strange kind of situation. Was just kind of trying to get low and avoid a block, and looked like one of his knees just kind of buckled on him. The good news was Trey wasn't in a boot or anything like that. He wasn't walking around with crutches. He had compression sock on. Not much of a limp, but out for this game as well. So the Stampeders will have a different looking secondary. They did cut Raheem Wilson earlier on in the week. 39 games with the Stampeders, signed back in 2019, and had been a really important piece for the secondary, but this was a football move. Just maybe had kind of, I'm not going to say fallen, but there are other players in the organization in the secondary that maybe have improved to a point where the team was comfortable moving forward with them. Also, most likely at a smaller salary cap number. You know, obviously this information is in public, but I think it's a fair assumption to say that guys like Deontay Ruffin and Brad Muhammad, who are, you know, Muhammad was in Ottawa for a cup of coffee last season. Ruffin is a CFL rookie, probably coming in at a smaller number than Raheem Wilson, who was part of the secondary in 2021. And we do know that Dave Dickinson told us in 2021 that they spent the most on their secondary across the entire CFL. So bringing back Raheem Wilson, he would have been expensive. So that's kind of what I have gleaned as far as what happened there. The play maybe had slipped a little bit. And when you look at guys getting healthy and who was available among the salary cap, you could make a move here and kind of give yourself a little bit of wiggle room as the year goes on, and maybe you look to bring in some guys who don't stick in the NFL a little bit further down the road as they get into their training camps and cuts and all that type of stuff over the next two-ish months.
Do you think they would have cut Wilson had they known Roberson was healthier? Like, did that have any correlation?
I really don't think that they're tied together. It was something that was asked of Mark Killam during his press conference. Of course, Mark Killam is the special teams coordinator and assistant head coach. He's been doing the media this week. He's Dave Dickinson is in protocols. Still don't know if Dave is going to be able to, if Dave has traveled or will travel or any of that type of stuff with the team to be in Ottawa to kind of call the game on Friday. But if not, offensive coordinator Pat Delmonico, who we had on the show Wednesday, great interview, by the way, would probably be calling the plays on the offense. But the alternate plans are in place for the team to obviously go about its business without Dave Dickinson running the show. But I actually did want to kind of dive into Mark Killam's press conference from yesterday where he does talk about the decision to release Raheem Wilson and if it was tied to the injury with Trey Roberson. But he starts by talking about releasing Raheem, who was a guy that was popular amongst his teammates, and it's a tough part of the business. It's what we always say.
Yeah, I mean, it's the dark side of the business. I mean, everybody here, we love Raheem as a person. He's been a great teammate for a couple years. And, you know, it's just one of those things. We've got some people coming off six. We had a whole bunch go on six at the end of camp, and those people are coming out. And it was just a team direct. We're moving in a different direction. But we wish Raheem nothing but the best.
How do you think it can affect the rest of the team, seeing a guy like a veteran, a likable guy, just gone?
I mean, we don't like to talk about that side of things. I mean, it's in the back of everyone's mind that those things can happen. You know, we've got some good football players that we're focused on right here, and we're just trying to move forward together.
How has Brandon Dozier looked coming back into practice here the last couple weeks?
He looked good, man. He looked good last week when he was eligible to practice. He's playing fast. We're excited to have him.
He's a guy, obviously, you're very happy to have in the DB group, but special teams coach.
I think he had 25 special teams tackles last year. He was our best two-phase player last year. But he does a lot for this football team. That's the type of person he is, the type of character he has. You know, I don't know if I can overuse him, but he's definitely going to be contributing somewhere for us.
Also saw a lot out there of Dedrick Mills. How far along the recuperation trail is he there?
He looks good, too. I mean, he did a nice job going through the treatment phase of getting himself in good shape. You know, and he's maintained that, so he doesn't look out of place at all.
I know you mentioned Bryce Bell. We talked about him a little bit yesterday, but that center position, you're sort of the captain of the O-line. You got to be the one communicating with everyone. For a young guy like him stepping into that role, is he expected to take on those duties as well, or do you kind of...
Yeah, he's got a couple vets beside him, for sure, and I think the big thing with all that block of five is that they're communicating all the time. That's when they play their best. But he did some of that last year as well, so we're pretty confident in it.
Press release just went out about George Hopkins, 1,000th game, obviously a legend
big
in
time.
This place. But
big time.
You know what? Tell me, you got one memory you'd want to share?
How much time do you got? Yeah. You know what I mean? No, it's Gio's a legend, and there's a reason his name is up on the wall there. And the best thing about Gio is that he comes to work the same way every day. It doesn't feel like 1,000 games or 100 years or however long it's been for him, but that he has the same attitude, and he's the same guy every day, and it's just
an honor to be around somebody like that.
For someone like Dozier, who's been out for so long, what do you think the biggest challenge is coming back? Is it endurance, timing?
Yeah, a little bit of both, and you know, the speed of the game too. I mean, it's different jumping in week 7 for us or whatever it is now. You know, the speed will be there, but for a veteran like him that's been around, it'll take him probably a couple series to get going, and then I mean, he's a competitor. He's a tear-your-face-off type of guy, and he's game-faced when he's out here on the practice field, so I think he'll adjust.
Some pretty important stuff there from Mark Killam, really, across the board. Obviously, the shift in the secondary is one thing. Brandon Dozier's return seems imminent. I would expect him to get the start in the spot that Raheem Wilson had previously held for 5 of the team's last 6 games at safety. I think one of the other keys here is Titus Wall is having an amazing year. I talked to Jameer Thurman about him last week, and Wall is playing the Sam linebacker position. He wasn't expected to get that spot coming out of camp. They had Dozier returning. Javian Elliott was another guy that I think they believe could hold that position, but got hurt and is slowly working his way back from the 6th game. Saw him doing a little bit of a workout on the sideline yesterday. But Titus Wall has stepped in, and whether it's on the blitz or in coverage or just helping out stopping the run with the other linebackers, he has been an outstanding surprise, to the extent that Jameer Thurman has already started the campaign for Rookie of the Year for a guy like Titus Wall. So when you have that available to you, I think it also makes the decision to release Raheem Wilson a little bit more easier to swallow if you're the Calgary Stampeders. The other thing coming out of there is on Dedrick Mills, who closer to returning, a guy who I'm really excited to see in kind of a more featured role, because during preseason and during his first regular season game, he's a guy that relishes contact. If it's kind of a one-on-one situation against a defensive back or against a linebacker, rather than make a hard cut or a juke attempt, he'd rather just put his shoulder down and run a guy over. And there were three separate instances in his first two games with the Stampeders where he did that, and the other player had to get off the field, had to be helped off the field. You don't want to see guys hurt, but when you're a player that can kind of run violently like that and disrupt another team's defense to that extent, that's something you want to see. And he got hurt. He kind of had a chip bone in his wrist in that first game where he was playing very well behind Kadeem Carey. And Kadeem Carey, we haven't seen at practice for the last 3 days with a hamstring injury. Probably going to be missing the game. He's listed as questionable for Friday's contest, but that would mean that it would be Peyton Logan, who's been pretty good at running back and very good as returner, and Dedrick Mills maybe coming off the 6-game injured list a little bit early to kind of help out as the main running back. And he's a guy who rarely you see him at practice away from Kadeem Carey. They're kind of locked at the hip. And I would say profiles quite similarly. One of the things Kadeem has done really well is catch the ball out of the backfield. And I don't know if we've seen enough of Dedrick Mills to say that that's something he can excel at as well. But I think it's an interesting part of the conversation. Kadeem Carey's been such a big part of this team. It's going to be big for them to make sure they can still have the run game going against Ottawa. And it's tough defense, but you're going to need the run game to get going as well because it's a big part of how the Stampeders run their offense these days.
Yeah, and Delmonico in our conversation yesterday was obviously full of praise when asked about Kadeem Carey. He's been a big part of the team, and I think going into the year, you know, a guy that was expected to, you know, maybe not necessarily guaranteed to reach the 1,000-yard plateau, but definitely a guy that you thought was going to be a big piece of this team. And, you know, you look at the leading rushers right now in the CFL, he is right up there with everybody else, but has like 20 less carries.
Yeah.
And shows you how explosive he is out of the backfield. He's averaging 6.5 yards per carry right now. And in the Canadian game, in the three down game, if you can get 6.5 yards on a carry on first down, I mean, you're looking at a lot of second and shorts. And it's been a big part of Calgary's offensive success. Obviously, last week against Winnipeg, they would have loved to finish more drives. You mentioned jokingly about the Paradise 5 field goals. But, yeah, he's been fun to watch. And his entire CFL career, now in his third season, would be four if he didn't miss the 2020 season like everybody else. But, you know, three seasons, 27 games, averaging 5.7 yards per carry. So he's always consistently been over that 5.5-yard mark per carry, and to have that in the CFL game is huge. And this season, he's been used more out of the backfield as a catching back. You know, wasn't necessarily used a ton last year. Like, he had 26 receptions in 13 games. So we're talking about, you know, two a game, not really used a ton. This year, about the same average, but, you know, he's on pace right now to certainly surpass last year's 194 yards out of the backfield. And he's just been such a big piece of that. And that was the case last week against Winnipeg when, you know, that defensive line is getting in your face real quick. It's nice to have that dump off option if you're Bo Levi Mitchell.
Yeah. And I really did like how they kind of planned to nullify the defensive line of Winnipeg as much as they could. Like, Willie Jefferson, for the most part, was limited. And that's about as best as you can hope to do against a guy like that, right? Like, yeah, he got his hands up on one pass that I think, you know, Luther Hakunavanu or someone was still able to catch. It might have been Malik Henry, and he had maybe one tackle, but they kept Bo away from Willie Jefferson pretty well. I thought that the offensive line executed well when it came to kind of taking him out, getting a little bit low on him so that he couldn't also get his hands up to try and get that in the passing lane too, and I thought they did a really good job. But one of the wrinkles here is going to be the loss of Sean McEwen. And how does the offensive line as a whole, who obviously are a massive part of the rush game, how do they adapt to having Bryce Bell in the middle of the offensive line, kind of calling out the plays, calling out the coverages, picking up blitzes, all those type of things? Because it's a vast difference. You're talking about Sean McEwen, who's an all-star, most outstanding offensive lineman in the league, you know, perennial nominee type of guy, and you're going to Bryce Bell, who, yes, he's a first-round pick, and he's been in the league for a couple of years now. He's not a totally raw rookie. He's been the sixth offensive lineman for a while, so he's been on the sidelines with these guys. He's been in the trenches with these guys. But moving into the center position where you've got to have your wits about you for sure, because you're really the kind of, I don't want to say the brains of the operation, but you're kind of that conduit to everybody across the offensive line. It's an important role. And Ottawa's got a pretty impressive front. It's going to be a fun challenge for the Stampeders against Ottawa. They're going to be eager to get on the field and try and get back in the win column, because yes, I think that, you know, maybe if you're a fan of the league or you're a fan of the Stampeders, you can find a little bit of solace in the fact that the Stampeders played the Blue Bombers hard in two games, and yes, they lost both of them, but the Bombers are a very good team, and you can kind of just say, yeah, we'll take what we can and learn from it and move forward. But it's not the same mentality for the players or the coaches. They've lost two in a row. Doesn't matter that it was against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. They've lost two in a row, and they've gone over 3 weeks since a win because they had a bye in there. This is a team that's eager to get back in the win column. So you just wonder if it's going to be one of those things where you're almost a little too fired up off the top, or if we see one of those kind of commanding, dominant, dialed-in performances from the likes of the Calgary Stampeders.
Just quick thoughts on tonight's game. Obviously, Winnipeg is the heavy favorite. They are favored in Montreal against the 2-5 Alouettes. Alouettes owner Gary Stern back at it, guaranteeing a win, guaranteeing that Winnipeg's win streak stops at 8 in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts on tonight?
Yeah, just kind of looking at the injury reports here as well. No Vernon Adams again, but Trevor Harris has been decent. Chandler Worthy out, who's kind of the outstanding special teamer for Montreal, and they traded Mario Alford to the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So that's a slight little kind of change there. Avery Ellis, one of their outstanding defensive linemen, doubtful as well. So that's a slight thing. I don't know, man. This Bombers team is so difficult to beat. They're just so good. They're so deep. Even without getting Greg Ellingson back, like, I think this is a team that you don't want to face. They are getting Jackson Jeffcoat back, and that's never great news if you're an opposing team.
What would you mention that Calero's record is as the Winnipeg starter?
Isn't it 20-2?
Something like that.
I think so. I think he moved to 20-2 after this most recent victory over Calgary. Yeah. Stamps are Bo Levi Mitchell and Dave Dickinson after this most recent loss to Winnipeg moved to 14-3 coming out of their bye. It's not as nice as the old 14-1 that it was, but alas.
So there's your look at the CFL as Week 9 begins tonight in Montreal. The Alouettes at home to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. We mentioned Calgary. They are in Ottawa on Friday. And Saturday, doubleheader begins in Toronto with the Argos at home to the Tiger Cats at 5 o'clock. 8 o'clock on the West Coast, BC Lions and the Edmonton Elks. Some discrepancy in games played. Winnipeg and Saskatchewan have not received a bye. Riders finally getting their first bye this week. Winnipeg will not get theirs, I believe, until week 12.
11, so. And then they play the Stamps in week 12.
Okay. So perfect. Calgary gets them off a bye. Just what you want.
Right? Yeah. What could go wrong? What could go wrong? And it's on the road, too. And that's tough building the play-in, man.
They might be 18-0 end of the year.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the CFL, so there's always someone will get banged up and they'll be like, whatever, it's the Elks. We don't need to worry about it. And then they'll lose by like 2 points to the Elks or something like that. It's the CFL. It could happen.
Bit of a down the last couple, but his last game was pretty good. Nathan Work remains a story. BC is 5-1. Not sure we had the Lions having 5 wins through the first 6 games of the year.
No, I thought
Rick
Campbell
has his guys humming, and they're in a pretty good spot to go to 6-1 as they host the 2-5 Elks in the week's final game on Saturday evening. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be shifting gears back to hockey. As looking forward to this conversation, Flames defenseman Oliver Shillington joins the show around the corner. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.